Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm Mikkeli.
Thank you for joining us for episode 141 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 67 of A Clash of Kings. That's Tyrion 15.
And as you know by now, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you. And hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in some hefty pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes. They'll provide some additional information that'll help you follow along, particularly if you're not reading with us. How are you, Mikkeli?
I'm doing all right. You have in the notes, there's a glaring pedantry in the heart of this chapter. Mm-hmm. So I'm very curious and interested.
When we
to hear
get
about
there,
it.
I'm going to quiz you on it. I want you to come up with it. Okay. I'm not telling you what it is, but it's big. It's unforgivable.
Is it like when Tyrion changed horses in the middle of the battle on the Green Fork?
I think worse, because that was confusing. This is just wrong.
I'm doing just fine. It's a bit of a day of reflection for me because my boy,
he's a tiny little toddler.
He once was. He now is graduating college in 2 days.
There's no coming back from that. He's been replaced.
I tell you. I don't know where the time went, but yes, he graduates from college in 2 days, and you know, he's already accepted a job in another city, staying in state, so yes. That's good, but he's apartment hunting and all that jazz, and you know, he just bought a TV for his new apartment, which he hasn't gotten a new apartment yet, but he's already got the TV for it.
Interesting priorities right there.
Yes. So...
I need a roof over my TV.
Right. That's phase two. Phase one, he locked in the TV. It was a Mother's Day deal. He got it off Amazon. So, you know, he had to lock that down. I was like, you know, they'll also have a Memorial Day deal and a 4th of July Day deal. It'll all be the same. Anyway, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I mean, as you know, we're both kind of worn out from work and stuff. But I got to go... We do like to talk about boating on the podcast.
That's what we do.
I went wakeboarding last weekend, and I actually did okay. I mean, I got up and wakeboarded and fell.
No
fell a
face couple times. Plants or anything?
There was one, but it was by the usually reliable Tim. But he'd been over the winter. He'd been watching videos of how to really jump on the wakeboard, and he went for it. And he got some air, I'll give him that. But when he landed, he face planted so hard. It scared me how hard he hit the water. It ripped the wakeboard off his feet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, that thing is on there like iron. I cannot believe you could rip that off with just water pressure, but it just tore it off his feet.
His feet were still there, right?
We circled. That's what I thought. Like, yeah, are his feet out of there? We circled back and we're like, you want to go again? He was like, oh, no.
I'm good for a while.
But that was fun. It was nice. It's a little early for boating, so the water was quite chilly.
I bet it was, yes. And you guys, where did you go? Nearby, or did you go to the mountains?
No, we went to the lake on the border between Virginia and North Carolina.
Okay, yeah.
It's called Carr Lake, but to everybody else on Earth who doesn't know that it's called Carr Lake, you would think it's called Kerr.
Kerr, right.
It is K-E-R-R.
Yes.
That's a big lake. It goes on forever.
Yeah. I've never been to Kerr. I've been to its sister lake, Gaston, just across the way there, but... Anyway, you know, speaking of how worn out we are from both our day jobs and, you know, putting together as good a show as we possibly can. I had it, Molly's volunteering, and so Stacy took her to her volunteer effort. And so, you know, I had the house to myself for a little bit. I sat down in the chair and fell asleep. Like, when I woke up, I was like, oh, shoot, it's almost time to record. That's when I texted you and said, okay, I can record whatever. So,
well, I wasn't asleep, but when you texted me, I was like, oh, God, I forgot we were recording. Yes. Top-level professional preparation there, everyone.
That's right. We're here. We're here and accounted for, and that's what matters.
On the subject of volunteering, so tomorrow our company has given us a day off for our mental health. It's as if they know. So I'm going to volunteer in my wife's pre-kindergarten class. I'm going to help with the little reprobates.
How nice. Are you going to teach from the bathroom? Like Carson?
No. They're in person now. We can sit in the classroom.
All right. Okay. That's progress. That's progress. Yes. On my day of recharge day, as they're calling it, I am hosting 10 early 20-somethings or 10 or so early 20-somethings at my house tomorrow for Ethan's graduation. Hurrah. So.
I feel like that's not going to be very rechargey. But then again, neither is volunteering with snot-nosed four-year-olds. So.
Yeah. That's a good point. I think we're supposed to sit in the chairs and fall asleep like I did a little bit ago.
All right, let's get down to business. How did we leave Tyrion Lannister? Last we saw of Tyrion, he was kicking posterior and taking names at the Battle of the Blackwater. It was all going swimmingly. Like a dream, even. Until Sir Mandon Moore, of the Kingsguard, no less, betrayed Tyrion, all but killed him with a sword stroke to the face. Only the intervention of Podrick Payne, who appeared to kill Moore, we're not 100% sure, prevented Tyrion from being dispatched there and then. McKelly, why don't we give him the summary of this one?
Okay. Well, Tyrion dreams that he's laying in a bed in a dingy cellar surrounded by dying and injured men moaning, screaming, or crying for their mothers. He's laying in his own filth and unsure whether the acrid smoke is making his eyes water or if he's crying. If it's the latter, he must not let his father see him. He is a Lion of Lannister, after all.
The room fades away and he finds himself on the tawny fields outside the city. He's surrounded by death and destruction. All the colour is gone from the world. He knows he's responsible for all of this, but he's forgotten why he did it. There's no sound except for the anguished voices of the dead. The Silent Sisters strip dead bodies and throw them on pyres, while maggots, wolves, and crows tear at the flesh of others. Ravens fly overhead.
He notices the sigils the dead men wear. Black hearts, grey lions, dead flowers, and pale ghostly stags. Tyrion thinks to ask the Silent Sisters why he killed them all, but he realizes he has no mouth, which would make it hard to do that. The discovery terrifies him, and he runs for the safety of the city. However, when he reaches the walls, the gates are closed to him.
He wakes to find himself back in his bed in the Tower of the Hand. He's fevered, weak, and his head feels unnaturally huge. He tries to remember how he got here. Images of the battle flash before him, culminating in a memory of Sir Mandon Moore. The thought is too terrifying, so he pushes it from his mind. He calls for help, but none comes.
Instead, he drifts back to sleep. This time, he dreams that people watch over him as he lays in bed. His sister and father, Varys and Littlefinger. He curses Littlefinger. They sent him to Bitterbridge, and he never came back. Tyrion knows that this must be a dream because his father couldn't be here. He's in the West fighting Robb Stark.
He wonders if they won or lost the battle, but realizes that if they lost, he'd surely be dead, so they must have won. That realization and the fact that he worked it out himself pleases him. His wits are returning, and those wits are all he has. He wakes again to find Pod sitting next to him. Pod runs off, and Tyrion realizes his head is heavily bandaged in hard plaster. Pod returns with a maester who gives Tyrion milk of the poppy. Back out he goes.
This time, he's at a great feast, seemingly in his honor. The singer Marillion sings of his deeds. All cheer him. Jaime knights him. His father smiles approvingly, and Shae is there to embrace him, calling him her Giant of Lannister. He wakes and feels like something is off with his room, but it's too dark to tell. His body hurts, especially his right side. He thinks of the battle and remembers that Sir Mandon tried to kill him, and would have if Pod hadn't saved him.
It dawns on Tyrion that he's no longer in his chamber, or even the Tower of the Hand for that matter, but he loses his battle with consciousness yet again. He dreams of a warm cottage along the Sunset Sea that he shares with Tysha. There's a lot of kissing and professing of their love for each other, especially by Tysha. It's beautiful and sweet, but Tyrion remembers that it was all a lie. She was hired by Jaime to play a role for gold.
He comes too as Maester Balibar prepares to dose him again with Milk of the Poppy. But Tyrion's not having it. He grabs the Maester's chain and chokes him with it. He wants the bandages off his face, and a mirror, and wine. After two cups of wine, he's ready to try the mirror. His face is badly disfigured. A long, crooked gash goes from under his left eye to the right side of his jaw, and three-fourths of his nose is gone.
He fully recalls now how Sir Mandon had tried to take his head off, but Tyrion pulled back at the last second. He thinks his sister must have put Mandon up to it, as do I. Balibar tells him he's in Maegor's Holdfast, so the Queen can watch over him herself. Tyrion wants to move back to the Tower of the Hand immediately, but Balibar has the unenviable job of telling him he's no longer Hand of the King. His father, Tywin, has taken that role. Balibar also explains that it was Tywin, Mace Tyrell, and Littlefinger who rode to the city's rescue.
At this, Tyrion asks that Balibar fetch Pod. When his squire arrives, he instructs him to find Maester Franken and have him prepare dream wine. No more Milk of the Poppy for Tyrion. Pod also tells him that Bronn has been knighted. Tyrion wants Pod to find him so he can stand guard over Tyrion. Finally, Pod confirms that he did kill Mandon by pushing him overboard. Tyrion tells him to keep that between the two of them. With that, he drifts back off to sleep, hoping to once again dream of Tysha.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes.
So this is like just basically one long dream, as was the previous Tyrion chapter.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, thanks. Which they're usually right with symbolism for us, for extracting clues as to where things are going and connections, but this one seems to be more about the past and less about the future, really. And definitely there's a mixture here of reality in the dreams. I mean, like, he dreams the people standing over him, probably there were at various points, so it's not quite clear what's a dream and what's not.
Right.
But certainly the death he's witnessed, I mean, clearly at various points he's seeing other dying people around him, and at various points he's just remembering being on the battlefield. And Tysha, I mean, the Tysha part is clearly a dream, but maybe Shay came to visit him and he sort of muddled those two as well.
Oh, yes. I did think about the fact that there was no Shay. Now, of course, she could have come while he was sleeping and
And
he'd not know she was there. Or I like this idea that maybe her presence caused him to have a augmented reality situation here.
Right. But basically, I'm getting my excuses in up front. There's not an awful lot to go on here. This is not the richest soil we've had to work with.
No, it's definitely not.
Yeah. So his death dream corresponds with the time that he was... we hear from Balibar at the end that he was in a dungeon with the other injured men.
Right.
So the death dream corresponds, you know, the dream of all the dying soldiers corresponds while with him lying in a room with lots of dying soldiers. So clearly the real and the dream were mixing together there.
Right, right.
Not the greatest reward for his service to the king. Not the greatest reward. I mean, forget the fact that he's going to be overlooked in the accolades for this battle. But just the fact he fought. Nobody who fought for King's Landing should be thrown in a dungeon and like left to die or live as they see fit.
Right. Yeah. I noticed the contrast between this chapter and the previous Sansa chapter, where even in this dream, he's owning the fact of his responsibility for the death and destruction that he's seeing when he's, you know, when he's walking the tourney ground battlefield. Whereas in the waking world, in Sansa 8, he was given no part of the credit for the success of his side. He was completely overlooked.
If Joffrey had said, "But lots of people died," he would have then said, "And that was Tyrion." But yeah, I mean, he literally thinks they died at my command. You know, all these people died at my command. So yeah, he's definitely self-aware enough to take responsibility for the things that he's caused.
Yes, yes. And, you know, he hears the voice. At first, this dream is all, there's no color. He mentions, I think we mentioned in the summary, that all color has been leached from the surcoats of the dead. And there's actually no color in the dream at all. There's a black, gray, and white is all there is. And at first he said it's completely silent. And then he hears the voices of the dead on the battlefield calling out for their mothers. And Tyrion thinks, "I never knew my mother." And so he, well, wants Shay. But it got me thinking about him never knowing his mother. And of course we knew this, you know, yes. His mother died in childbirth, giving birth to him. But, you know, I was just thinking on how it shaped his life, having no mother. It, you know, at best, he's got a father who is embarrassed by his existence, just mm-hmm. barely tolerates him, mocks and embarrasses him in public. And as a teen, we recall how this Tysha story ended. He was basically forced by his father to rape his wife, Tysha. You know, and that was the first woman that he ever loved. Clearly, you hear in this dream how much they cared for each other. And at the absolute worst, he's got a father who downright hates him. And then he's got a sister who behaves very similarly to how their father treats him.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really only Jaime of his nuclear family that shows him any love and appreciation. Maybe yeah. his Uncle Geryon, but his Uncle Geryon's gone, so.
Yeah. And actually, it's a good point you raise because for most of us, for those of us who grow up with a mother, the sort of, like, love of a female is kind of like a you know, it's an anchor point in our lives. You know, we have
right.
that.
Yeah.
And Tyrion doesn't because his mother died and his father never remarried, so it's like he didn't get even a stepmother. But then the loves he's had, you know, romantic loves he's had, have turned out, you know, turned to ashes in his mouth, you know,
right.
He thought they were real and then turned out they weren't. And so he doesn't trust love of females the way that the rest of us would, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true. And his older sister, who could have, you know, possibly replaced that mother figure in his life, treats him terribly, like he's a exactly. monster, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You could definitely imagine how it would have a profound impact on how he views himself and the world at large.
You know what it made me think of, though? The whole leeching of the color is, you've heard of people dreaming in black and white.
Right.
Okay. Did people dream in black and white before the advent of television and film? Because the concept of black and white only sort of came to be when sort of like early photography and
that's a good point.
So did humans have that in their brain, that was a thing?
That I had never thought of that before in my life. Now there, I don't know a lot about like eye conditions and stuff, but there might be some condition that allows people, that prevents people from seeing color, you know, that's possible. Yeah. But aside from that, yeah, that's a very good point. People wouldn't know. I guess picture books would have been, you know, like charcoal drawings and stuff, but
a drawing of something in black and white is not something that I would think, well, but yeah, I guess so. I guess charcoal drawings are black and white representations. Yeah. One thing I'll say about this chapter, we've several mentions of him lying in his own filth. I mean, like multiple times in this chapter,
right.
He either soils yes. or wets himself. The Maesters have been scientifically gathering medical knowledge for thousands of years. You'd have thought that concepts like germs and infections would have occurred to them by this point.
Solid point. Yes. Right.
They're not very good. They're very disappointing.
Or I guess it could be when he was down in that cellar, there was just too many of them to care for.
True, But then again, I'm pointing to the fact that these people should be cared for because they are soldiers who fought for the city. But even when he's in the Tower of the Hand, he's wetting the bed, sort of,
right.
and seems to be just lying in his filth.
Yes, that is true.
I'll also say that his first thought when he thinks he's crying is to worry that his father will judge him. That's not a good sign of a good, healthy father-son relationship right there. But that's pretty much...
Yes, right.
He's like the canary down the coal mine. What would your dad say if you cried?
He's surrounded by death and injured and dying people. And his first thought is, oh, I can't be crying. I can't let my father see me if I'm crying. But, you know, we were just talking about the color being leached out. And it made me think that if you compare that dream again to Sansa 8 and you think of that self-congratulatory party they threw in the throne room in Sansa 8. On the inside of the city, do you remember the description of the members of the court? Like Jalabar Zo, for instance? Sansa went out of her way to describe how colorful and vibrant everybody was dressed. You know, like on the inside, in the safety of the throne room, they're romanticizing the battle and cheering and lauding the victors and kind of glossing over the death and destruction. Meanwhile, Tyrion's dream, which is actually a dream, not the reality that that Sansa 8 was, is much closer to the reality going on the outside of the walls. No colors, swollen, unrecognizable bodies being eaten by animals and stripped and burned with no recognition or ceremony. There's a great deal of contrast between how these two post-war, post-battle situations are unfolding.
But I see, I would get even more. I mean, I see the contrast, but I would actually contrast more the specifics of the rank and file soldiers are being left to die in a dungeon while we celebrate the victory. It's like,
yes,
it's just unconscionable, you know?
Right. Yes.
But yeah, I mean, obviously some of the ghostly shades that he sees represent some of the houses involved. He sees grey wolves, presumably the Starks, pale ghostly stags, the Baratheons, which we can remember just occasionally that Joffrey is supposedly a Baratheon. But
theoretically.
Yeah. Dead flowers, which suggest the Tyrells, which is sort of interesting, but I guess maybe there were Tyrell soldiers down in the dungeon with him.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And then black hearts, which would be Stannis, presumably, because he's...
That's what I would think, yes.
Yeah, he adapted the Baratheon symbol to include the heart, the fiery heart of R'hllor.
Right, yeah.
But that's interesting that they were even rescued in that way, you know, I mean, maybe, you know what I mean? I would think when the battle's over, you'd be like, put a sword through that one and take that one to the dungeon, you know?
That, yes, very much, yeah. Yeah, there was a reference to gray lions too. I wonder how many of those,
right?
There were, yeah. You know, yes.
If you mattered, you weren't in that dungeon,
right?
With
possibly.
One exception,
yes, except for one exception, right? Yeah, you know the thing about, so he saw the wolves tearing at the dead bodies, but which is kind of odd, I guess. They must have come out of the Kingswood or something, because everything else was a sigil of a house who fought in this battle, but there were no Starks that we know of fighting in this battle. But the wolves seem to be like actual wolves, not sigils.
Yeah.
So,
but then there's the symbolism of the wolves feasting on the carrion of this battle, you know, that
okay. Yeah.
They might take advantage of it.
Yeah, I could see that.
So when he tries to cry out to the Silent Sisters for help, he has no mouth, and he tries to enter the city, but the gates are closed to him. So this feels like a premonition of his soon-to-be-discovered diminished status. He'll no longer have a voice and no longer be welcome in the important meetings in the city.
You know, that's a good point. It's funny that we've read a lot of this and had slightly different but similar takes on things, because when I read that, I thought of it more of how he's been treated thus far. You know, he has been replaced by the Hand of the King, but there was no mention of his efforts to save the city during the ceremony. And House Lannister, you know, he did a lot to save them as well. And he's stuck outside with the realities of the battle, of what his efforts caused, while being locked out of the city in all its self-congratulatory pomp and circumstance, which he played a role in allowing them to have. Because, yes, I will agree that without Tywin and Mace Tyrell's arrival, it's very likely that Stannis would have won this battle. But it's also very possible that Tywin and Mace Tyrell would have been late to the party had there been no Tyrion to, put together defenses
right
to protect the city.
Yeah, if those ships had landed, brought the troops across before, I mean, maybe they were just biding their time and they could have popped out at any time, but it feels like they arrived in the nick of time. The nick of time only existed because of Tyrion's efforts.
Right. That is the question. We don't know if they were laying in wait for him to split his Stannis to split his forces on each side of the river, or if they just arrived right then and managed to save the day.
So at this point, Tyrion's moved to a real bed. It's still doubling as a toilet, which is not particularly nice. So he actually has three locations. Initially, he's down in the dungeon with the other dying soldiers. Then he's in the Tower of the Hand. And finally, he's in Maegor's Holdfast. So when Pod sees him wake, he runs to fetch the Maester.
So I was thinking about, why would he start in the Tower of the Hand? Why would he start in that bed and then be moved to Maegor's Holdfast? And I was thinking about what happened in between. Because he wakes up, he's in the Tower of the Hand. Falls back to sleep, wakes up again, he's in Maegor's Holdfast. Pod sees him awake, and Pod goes and gets a maester, and the maester gives him Milk of the Poppy, and he's back out. He goes back to sleep. And when he wakes again, he's been moved to Maegor's Holdfast. So it's possible that that instance when Pod sees him awake is the first time anybody saw that he had woken from his slumber. And I wonder if Cersei thought up to that point, he's dying. I'll be content to play the sad sister and allow him to die in his own bed. And then once he woke, she wanted him closer to her so she could make sure that that didn't happen again.
His waking, you mean?
Yes, that he didn't wake again.
It's a good point. I mean, it is, if that's true, that's a strange act of compassion by Cersei.
That she was allowing to let him die in his own bed.
In his own bed. It's like, so maybe that was just a dream. Maybe he was never in the Tower of the Hand. Because why would you put him in the Tower of the Hand? I mean, you've let him be amongst the common soldiery in the dungeon. And then, okay, maybe at some point you're like, damn, that's our son. We need to get him somewhere. But he's been stripped of that office. You know Tywin's going to be the Hand of the King. So you'd think there might not have been that intermediate space.
Yes, that's why I'm wondering, like, what was Tywin doing? Where was Tywin staying while Tyrion was in his bed?
He comes in that evening. He's like, what the hell? And he's wet the bed.
He's wet the bed. It smells like urine in here. Tyrion does think that Cersei is keeping him in a drug-induced coma, basically, with Milk of the Poppy, never intending that he wake. And then Balibar says that Cersei had him moved to Maegor's Holdfast, in quotes, so she could watch over him herself.
As a maester who presumably has taken some kind of Hippocratic oath to look after his patient, he should have refused.
Right.
So, in his dreams, Tywin, Cersei, Varys, and Littlefinger visit him and stare down at him. He thinks this must be a dream because he doesn't think Tywin's here. He also doesn't think Littlefinger's here, but Littlefinger at least could have come back, but Tywin's 1,000 leagues away, so it shouldn't be here.
Right. So I think you alluded to this earlier. It feels like that actually wasn't a dream. He thought it was a dream only because it didn't make sense for his father to be there.
Right, right. It doesn't make a lot of sense for Cersei to be there unless she's like smothering with a pillow.
But that's the thing. There's so many opportunities. If she wanted him dead, she could have so easily had
but
him
Cersei's
killed.
Cersei's pretty rotten. She maybe like looks at his like, you know, one quarter nose and thinks, I hope he gets better.
That's true. I never thought of that. Yeah, that's a good
point. He is a stunted dwarf, but now he's really messed up.
So he mentions Cersei and Tywin standing over him talking and he can't hear. He thinks, he doesn't know why he can't hear, but we know it's because his face is heavily bandaged, the bandages are probably covering his ears. But when I read that, I wondered, what have those two been discussing since Tywin's arrival? Has she been filling his head with poison about, you know, taking credit for things that went well and laying blame at Tyrion's feet for things that didn't go well.
Yeah, but I mean, Tywin's too calculating to believe her. I mean, she was in charge when Ned Stark was beheaded, right?
Right. Yeah, theoretically. Yeah, right. I mean, it would happen on her watch.
Exactly. It was on her watch. That's why he sent Tyrion, you know?
Right.
I've got to imagine he's going to take what she says with a pinch of salt at this point.
Yes, right. I would hope so. But, you know, dads and daughters, we... But so I was also wondering why everybody came to visit. I guess it maybe just curiosity got the best of them. But
Tywin might have just been going to bed.
Move over. But, you know, we both have said that Cersei is the number one suspect for the murder attempt. But all we have mentioned that Littlefinger also could have possibly been trying to silence Tyrion for the whole dagger situation. And, you know, Varys, who knows? We don't know exactly what Varys is up to. So it's possible that any of these other ones could have just been checking because they don't know what conversation Mandan and Tyrion had before Mandan tried to take Tyrion's head off. He could have told him who hired him to kill him before he tried to kill him.
Yeah.
You know, along those lines, Tyrion thinks in this chapter, and we have mentioned it before, like I just said, that Cersei must have paid Mandan more to off him. Like we discussed in the last Tyrion chapter, Mandan Moore is a member of the Royal Kingsguard. He didn't have a whole lot of use for money. You know, he can't hold lands or titles and et cetera. And he already has an abode in the White Sword Tower. So it seems like finances might be the least likely way to sway him. Other than, you know, just telling him to do it because you're the Queen Regent. Right. You know?
There's always that. And of course, Mandan Moore, being who he is, was like, sure, whatever.
Okay, you say. And again, that also brings me back to the possibility of King Joffrey, because he's the king. Whatever he tells the Kingsguard to do, they do without question for the most part. I mean, see Sansa, and she'll tell you about that.
Yeah.
And again, I will say that Joffrey was the last of the people who we are considering as suspects to be in the presence of Mandan Moore. So
Tyrion figures out that they must have won the battle because he's alive.
And, right.
Then he realizes that his wits are coming back because he is able to reason that out. And so he's beginning to think he might survive all this. But there's still more dreams to be had. So he has the next one is a feast in his honor. Marillion singing songs about him. You would immediately assume that was a dream because Marillion is just a pain in the neck who would probably sing horrible songs about you at Cersei's behest.
Uh-huh.
And Jaime knights him and Shay embraces him. It must be, that's a nice dream he's got going there.
Yeah, and Tywin smiles approvingly at him, which is probably the thing he would have been most excited about in the whole dream.
Do not wipe away a tear at this point, Tyrion.
Right. I will say, at least he got recognition in some victory feast. He sure didn't in real life, so he got to experience it in the dream. But my thoughts on that dream were that it basically encompassed all he's ever wanted in life. You know, love, acceptance from the people on par with his brother Jaime, his father's approval and true love from Shay. So, you know, that's a big deal, you know, but...
So when he wakes from that one, he's no longer in the Tower of the Hand. He's got this terrible pain in his right side. And now he remembers what Sir Mandan Moore did without any equivocation. It's like, he tried to kill me. And we weren't sure in the last chapter if Pod had actually killed Mandan Moore, if he pushed him or if Mandan fell. But it seems now that through Tyrion's recollection, Pod literally pushed him overboard.
Right, yeah. It seems like it, because at the very last line, paragraph of the chapter, Pod says, I didn't mean to he was going to say kill him, but he couldn't get the words out. So, yes, it seems like we have our answer on that.
So Tyrion's next dream is probably the sweetest of all. It's him and Tysha in their brief marital bliss. And as we said, you know, given Tyrion's background, you can see how a relationship like this would be so intoxicating to him. First love can be to anyone, but he being so sad and lonely at home, it would have been particularly easy for him to fall to an infatuation like this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's something he's been searching for ever since, that right. to recapture that feeling. That's why he does things like have a pretend fantasy relationship with Shay. And you can certainly see elements of his time with Tysha in this fantasy life with Shay.
But I'll haul you up here. Is his relationship with Shay a fantasy?
I mean, I think at times.
To me, it seems pretty real. Obviously, you know, she is, her profession makes her want to say the things that the guy wants to hear. But at the same time, there seems to be an honesty to it. But maybe I'm just naive, you know.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes. Yeah, that we don't know. That's the thing, is we don't know whether Shay truly is in love with Tyrion or whether she is just playing a role. He goes back and forth at times. Sometimes he, you know, into himself professes his love to Shay and then reminds himself, you know, she's just playing a role that I hired her to play. So yeah, until she vocalizes or we get a POV of Shay, we're going to just be guessing at her feelings.
The other thing is, I mean, you gotta feel for Tyrion here, because he is, you know, he's unattractive in a traditional sense. And in this kind of era, it would have been very hard for him to attract a woman who wasn't being paid. You know?
True. Right. Yeah.
And so he's always going to have to, that will always be the starting point. And then he'll never quite trust them because of Tysha.
Right. Yes. Because he thought Tysha was true love. He thought Tysha truly loved him for who he was. And then it was, you know, divulged to him that no, she was paid to play her role. So
Maester Bellibar tries to give him more milk of the poppy, and Tyrion chokes him with his chain of office and demands that he cuts the bandages off his face. Bellibar explains that they found him in the cellar.
So, about the cellar thing, you'd think he'd be pretty easy to recognize. You know, there couldn't have been that many men on the battlefield that resemble him, that's wearing a Lannister sigil likely on him. And think, huh, wonder who this random Joe is. And, you know, I don't know, just throw him on that gurney over there. So I'm wondering if Cersei, in quotes, accidentally stuck him there to die. And then he was found. And then someone was like, oh, wait, he's not supposed to be here. And
you, sir, are moving towards the pedantry.
Oh, okay.
You're not quite there yet. But you are moving towards it.
I'm getting warmer.
Uh-huh. No, I mean, absolutely, you're right. It makes very little sense that he would be taken down to the cellar unless someone was actively doing it. But right. Even then, we're still not at the depth. The full heart of the pedantry is still missing. You wait. It's coming.
Well, so he's basically choking Bellibar with his chain, which I found a little surprising that he had the strength to do that and that Bellibar couldn't just swat his hand away. But okay. Okay, we'll go with it. And he says he wants wine, not with no poppy in it. And I thought, you know, you could see why House Red Wine has such an impressive fleet, because Westerosi's drink and use wine like water. They use it for everything. Bellibar, in just a few like sentences or paragraphs before this part, Bellibar says he used boiled wine to clean Tyrion's wounds. So they do they probably bathe in wine.
Yeah, but obviously you don't want to waste wine. So after he boiled the wounds in the wine, he then fed it to him.
Then he fed, right.
and don't judge, okay? Some of us just need it, okay?
We just need it.
So he, learns that his father's taken the Hand of the King role. Can't be a surprise if you know Tywin's in town, but if you think Tywin's a thousand leagues away, bit of a shock.
Yes, right, yes. And, you know, he wanted, the way he found out that his father was in town and has stripped him of his title and job and had taken it for himself is because he wants to be moved back to the Tower of the Hand. And Balibar is like, well, see, the thing is this. I'd like to, but I can't because your dad's back. And, you know, he wanted to be back in the Tower of the Hand where he could have his own men around him. And that made me wonder, so far there's been no word on if his mountain clansmen have returned from the Kingswood now that the battle is over. Shaga and company, you'd think they might have stopped in. Maybe they weren't allowed. Maybe they've been restricted. But I'm curious whether they'll be back, whether they have returned safely or not. We'll have to find out, I guess.
So against Doctor's orders, he takes a look at himself in the mirror. It's not great. It's a jagged gash from below his left eye all the way across to his right jaw with 3/4 of his nose gone. And he has reasons to not be very secure about his appearance, and this is not going to help.
Yeah, and you know, they already call him, you know, names like the Imp and the Evil Monkey Demon, and I can't imagine this is going to have a positive impact on that. So you just got to wonder, people are already making assumptions about him because, you know, he's small of stature and, you know, his hips don't move like he'd like them to and stuff. So now they're going to see this face, which has been disfigured. And are they going to make more assumptions about what and who he is? But, you know, I did think he could go by the nickname Tyrion Cleftjaw. That worked for Dagmar. So,
yeah, that's good. You know,
maybe that will help him.
His jaw is not quite as cleft as Dagmar's, but yeah, it's a good point. Maybe cleft nose.
Cleft nose. Cleft face.
So Bronn has been knighted, and so our speculation that he rode the ox out of town after raising the boom chain sadly proves not true.
That would have been a fun one if we had POVs of Bronn riding an ox around town, around Westeros. You know, he's been knighted. So, yay for Bronn.
Yes.
But, yeah, it's quite the social climb since agreeing to be Tyrion's champion back at the Eyrie. He's risen from sellsword to Hand of the King's right-hand man, and now Sir Bronn, so...
I'll actually say that that last one is not necessarily up from the previous one. Right-hand man to the Hand of the King is one-man job. They just knighted 600 people.
that's a good point.
I mean, literally, if you survived the battle, you got knighted.
You got a knighthood, except for Tyrion.
I mean, all he did was ride an ox. He got knighted.
But, you know, it got me wondering about old Bronn here. Now that he's officially a knight and Tyrion's no longer the Hand of the King, will he still be so keen to be Tyrion's right-hand man, you know?
Yeah.
He might no longer feel the need to be so connected. He's got his own thing going on here.
But Tyrion still owes him a debt, doesn't he? I mean, it feels like Tyrion still owes him a debt. I mean, he's been paying him in kind so far, but I think Tyrion promised him some considerable riches, didn't he?
That's a good point. He did say, if you're ever thinking of betraying me, come to me first and I will match or double the offer or whatever. So, yeah, you know, that's a good point. He does, I guess, as long as Tyrion's willing to continue to shell out.
Right, but the thing is now, of course, the person who owns the purse strings from which Tyrion might be paying you is in town. So maybe you don't need the middleman anymore.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah.
All right. Do you have some background for us?
Background. So we've heard often enough about our characters taking milk of the poppy to sleep or to dull intense pain, as what both were happening in this chapter here. In fact, milk of the poppy seems to be one of the few things that is universally used across this known world that we've, at least as far as we've experienced. But we've never really talked much about what it is. So milk of the poppy, as you might guess, is a painkiller made from the poppy flower. It gets its name because the liquid that is you know, it's a liquid substance, is thick and white. So it's kind of got a milkish look to it and probably texture to it. And but as we saw with Tyrion, it doesn't just dull pain. It also quickly induces sleep. And again, Tyrion's experience while sleeping under the aid of Milk of the Poppy isn't necessarily atypical. Those on Milk of the Poppy often have really odd dreams, which are actually known as poppy dreams. We saw Ned have a similar dream after he broke his leg when he was dreaming about being at the Tower of Joy fighting the Kingsguard trying to get Lyanna. Yeah. So, you know, these dreams are known to come with taking Milk of the Poppy. And when Khal Drogo was dying, he was taking something similar to Milk of the Poppy called poppy wine. So I guess the Dothraki do it their own way. Again, you got to use the wine for everything.
Yeah.
So
probably red wine.
Right. Yes. Arbor Gold specifically. But Tyrion doesn't want any more Milk of the Poppy. He asks Podge to fetch him some dream wine instead. Dream wine is similar to Milk of the Poppy as it's a painkiller and a sleep aid. However, it's thought to be safer. In fact, you can even add poppy to dream wine, and it's still thought to be a safer alternative to Milk of the Poppy.
See, but is there an active ingredient in the dream wine beyond the alcohol? Or is it just strong alcohol? Because I was curious about that, if there's anything in there that actually kills the pain. Alcohol does that, but...
Yes, that is a very good question. There's no information provided about that. There was very little information provided about dream wine. So,
okay.
But yeah, that's a very good question. I don't know.
Comparison with a television show. It's not the greatest television to watch somebody dreaming while they're in pain in a bed.
Wasn't there a whole movie called Misery
with yes,
James Caan? Was it James Caan?
I think it is James Caan, yeah.
I think
it's
James Caan.
Kathy Bates, right?
Yes.
So this is mostly skipped. Tyrion is cared for by Maester Pycelle in Pycelle's chambers.
Okay.
And when Tyrion finally wakes, with a hitch in his throat, he thanks Pod for saving his life. Shay comes to remove his bandages. And she can't hide her winces when the bandages come off. Although, honestly, just for the sake of makeup, his scars are not as bad as they are in the book.
Yes, I recall this.
Yeah, but she says she loves him anyway, so that's kind of sweet. That's the sort of Taisha part of this.
Right.
It's captured by Shay still being nice to him. Pedantry Corner.
The segment we've all been waiting for. Everyone just went to their chapter markers and went straight to Pedantry Corner. So
well, you got 90% of the way. It's like, how could you put Tyrion in with the common soldiery?
Right.
Because it's Tyrion Lannister. He's dressed like a Lannister. He's 4'6", and he's injured on the battlefield. How does he get lumped in with everybody else? Was there a whole platoon of dwarves in Lannister garb? It's
yes.
Crazy. All right, but you could say, well, this is phase 2 of the kill Tyrion plan. Just throw him in with everybody else.
Right, Gen Pop.
Here's my question. What did Podrick Payne do after he killed Sir Mandon Moore? Did he? He's just killed a member of the Kingsguard to save Tyrion Lannister's life. Did he just walk off and leave Tyrion there to be dragged to the dungeon where he could later go and say, that's Tyrion Lannister? He would have, like, rested his head on his lap and said soothing things and made sure he got... It makes no sense.
Yeah, the only thing that could have happened is him being just a boy. People are like, okay, we got this kid. We got this. Scram, I guess, is
Maybe.
Possible.
Maybe. But I mean, who amongst the Silent Sisters or the Maesters or whoever it is dragging the wounded off the thing would override Pod if Pod said, but that's Tyrion Lannister. Are they all on Cersei's payroll?
Yes, good point. Yes, very good point. Yeah, you'd think he'd at least go to Bronn or someone that he has some sort of relationship with and be like, hey, Tyrion is down in Gen Pop wasting away.
But here's the thing. Even if they said, we've got this kid, Podrick would have gone with him. Podrick would not have let Tyrion out of his sight.
Yes, I agree. And they'd had to make him stay
exactly.
away.
Exactly. And even then, he would trail behind and find out where he was, and then gone to get Bronn, and then come back and got him out of there. Maybe that's what happened. Maybe he was only in the dungeon for like 5 minutes.
That's true. We don't know yet. Maybe we'll find out how this all played out. But yes.
But anyway, I think it's pedantry. I don't think it makes any sense that he was, as you say, in Gen Pop. Yeah. All right. News and notes. I see the words huge news and I get excited. Do tell.
Well, just today, in fact, I communicated with someone that I think many of our listeners will be familiar with. Ilio M. Garcia and I were discussing him and possibly Linda Antonsson coming on the show for a special episode after we finish Clash of Kings.
That is exciting. I did say some mean things about them about 10 episodes ago. We may need to go back and re-edit that one, just FYI. I remember I just complained that they were aiding and abetting George Martin in not writing.
Right. Got to keep him on task. Keep him on. Exactly. Keep him focused.
You've got an in with him. Keep the man on task.
Right. So what we're going to do, we're going to have a special episode with Ilio and possibly Linda as well. And we're going to reach out by the time you've heard this, I've already done that. So we're going to reach out to our Royal Kingsguard members on a BMAC site and our Lord Paramounts and ask them to provide questions that we might, we will consider asking Ilio and Linda. So very exciting. And those members will get the episode a week early. We're going to run it. We're hoping to run it the week after we finish the last chapter of A Clash of Kings.
Great.
And that will be for our, it'll be the week after we finish for our BMAC, which is Buy Me a Coffee, just easier to say BMAC.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for saying that. I didn't know.
Royal Kingsguard and Lord Paramount tiers. And for everyone else, it'll be the following week. So the week after.
Well, I'm really looking forward to getting to meet them. I will A, apologize, and B, be very excited. Because, I mean, they're Game of Thrones royalty. They own a Wiki of Ice and Fire, right? They started it.
Yeah.
They
right.
Fired it. It's a tremendous resource. I mean, it's like us in written form.
Yes. They run all of Westeros.org, which has a lot more stuff than just a Wiki of Ice and Fire. But that is something that I use very frequently, of course.
Yeah.
Very exciting news. Now, I'll let you tell our listeners the other news.
Oh, one of the reasons we're doing this is because we're going to have that as a bridge, because we're going to take a couple of weeks off at the end of this book, because McKelly and I cannot stand the sight of each other anymore.
That's what it is.
If I spend one more evening looking in this guy's face, I'm going to...
We don't even turn our cameras on anymore.
I feel towards McKelly as Tyrion feels towards Cersei right now. We just need a little bit of break to recharge, because we're tired. So the interview with Elio and hopefully Linda will be the bridge to keep you going while we take a couple of weeks off.
Right. I'm very excited about that. Very excited. I had goosebumps when I saw the email from Ilio. I got goosebumps. That's so exciting.
Me too. I was talking to my boss and I was still typing with my left hand like, oh my God, oh my God.
So that's very exciting. Some news around George Martin's blog. He had a post. This was actually cut from last week's episode because we were very long last week. I think
that
we've got
the longest episode ever, I think.
It was close. Yeah, it was right up there. Martin had a long, sprawling, not a blog post. I get that out. He talked about the New York sports teams, NFL drafts, and Dark Winds, and his cinema in Santa Fe, and the railway that he just got up and running. But there was also news that we listeners would find most interesting about the Winds of Winter and the House of the Dragon updates. So those are the ones we're going to focus on here. So I'm just going to read this directly, his quote. He said, Winds of Winter is going to be a big book. The way it's going, it could be bigger than A Storm of Swords and A Dance with Dragons, the longest books in the series to date, which this isn't his quote, but that's 80 chapters and 71 chapters, respectively, there. Mm-hmm. So, and then he went on with, I do usually cut and trim once I finish, but I need to finish first.
Mm-hmm.
And we all went, right. But then he went on to say that he has seen some rough cuts of a couple more House of the Dragon episodes, and he's very happy. His quote is, those of you who like complex, conflicted, gray characters, as I do, will like this series, I think. There will be plenty of dragons and battles, to be sure, but the spine of the story is the human conflicts, the love and the hate, the character drama rather than action and adventure.
I watched the trailer for that today. It looks interesting. And it one does. Of the main characters, one of the actresses, is from my hometown.
Get out!
Yeah, Olivia Wilde. I don't know her particularly, but she's from my hometown. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. All right.
Because I'm so ancient, I believe I'd actually moved out of my hometown before she was born in my hometown, but still my hometown.
Do you know a famous actor is from my hometown as well?
Yeah, but you have a much bigger town than I do.
True. I'm not including all of Pittsburgh. I'm talking the little town I lived in outside of Pittsburgh.
Oh, that's good. Go on.
Jimmy Stewart and I are from the same hometown. In fact, we went to the same high school. Not at the same time, obviously.
Who?
Jimmy Stewart.
Oh, like old actor. Like
Yes, old. He's in some very famous movies, not the least of which being, oh my God.
It's going to be something like, it's a Christmas thing.
Yes, I'm totally blanking on the name of it. Called It's a Wonderful Life. Good Lord. My dad played Clarence in the town production, the town theater production of that play for like 10 straight years. And I totally drew a blank on the name of it. So, but he also was in Mr. Smith Went to Washington and a bunch of other really famous films from back in the day.
My hometown actually is a hotbed of acting. And that is quite in large part because of a very, very long running soap opera in the UK called Coronation Street, which is set in the north of England, where I'm from. And so to be in that show, you need the right accent. And so my hometown has the accent for that show. And so there is a youth theatre workshop, which is a production line for becoming an actor on that show. And that's hugely popular. I mean, tens of millions of people watch that show.
Huh. Very cool.
So, yeah.
So you missed the boat on that, I guess, huh?
I had another calling. All right, we have a review we should read out before we...
Yes, it's a fantastic review. I was very excited for you to see this review.
I read this before we started, and I do have to correct it at one point, but otherwise,
right.
It's good.
Yeah. I saw where you'll need to make a correction.
So on podchaser.com, a listener called Nightfall, which is a great name, said, "Hey, Simon and McKelly, I discovered your podcast a few weeks ago as I was looking for a good Game of Thrones podcast as I'm nearly done with book one of A Song of Ice and Fire and wanted a good companion to delve deeper into the world of Westeros. After trying a few of them," it's always a mistake, "I was left disappointed. They just didn't work for me and I found myself bored halfway through. But when I eventually found Ghosts of Harrenhal, I was hooked. I must have gone through at least 5 episodes in a day, and I must say I was extremely impressed with the amount of hard work and effort you guys put into each and every episode. Unlike many other podcasts, the quality is absolutely top-notch. I found myself devouring episode after episode. The detailed analysis and discussion of each chapter is very intriguing and made me realise many things that I'd missed on my read-through. The occasional joke and witty banter..." Yeah. Very occasional. "...is always enjoyable. And at some bits, I actually found myself laughing out loud, like the story Simon told of his daughter insisting that there's an animal in the house." Well, this is the correction, because it's actually my wife was the one who was insisting that the animal was in the house. The reason you thought there was a daughter involved was because of the girlish scream that I delivered at the end of the story. "And when Simon finally found said animal, I could almost hear the scream he described. Those are the bits that make me truly enjoy and love the podcast. You guys are doing an absolutely phenomenal job with the pod. Thank you so much for providing us with the entertainment we need in these times. Keep them coming." So thank you so much, Nightfall. That's terrific.
Woof. That was beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Conclusion. So Tyrion's alive.
Yay.
Those of us who like Tyrion. Pod is a hero. And also a slayer of Kingsguard. That takes some doing.
Yes, that's right. He'll go down in the annals of Westerosi history.
But he shouldn't have gone off to do that lap of honor, leaving his his boss to die. That was thoughtless.
He was worn out after all that. He needed the breather.
Tyrion was dragged away while Pod was napping. So is Tyrion's care truly in his benefit? I mean, he is being kept alive, but is he being kept alive? It seems like the maester is primarily feeding him milk of the poppy to keep him docile.
Right. Yes.
So that does feel like that might not be what the maester would do if he truly cared about Tyrion. That might be commands coming from on high.
Right. Yeah, that, of course, that's what Tyrion thinks is happening. So, after this chapter, when I was thinking back about it for conclusion purposes, my thought was, and we thought Theon woke up from a nightmare to a living one when his sister arrived in Winterfell. Tyrion is taking waking up from a nightmare to a whole nother level here. He lost his nose, the job that he loved, and wait until he finds out how the credit for defending the city was taken from him by pretty much everyone else at court.
And it's not just his bossy sister, it's his father that's come to town.
Right, yes. And all of this has been done by his family. If he's correct in assuming that it was Cersei who influenced Sir Mandon to try and kill him. So yeah, that was my primary thought after reading this chapter.
Has Cersei been poisoning, well, not literally poisoning, but dripping poison into Tywin's ear about what Tyrion has done in King's Landing in the intervening time? Obviously the guess is yes. She's hardly going to be saying all the good things he did.
Tyrion did such a good job fixing the mess that I created.
Right. Yes. It seems unlikely. But is Tywin smart enough to see through it?
Yes.
Or does he care enough about Tyrion to bother seeing through it?
Right. Both good questions. Bronn got knighted.
That's just nice. Yeah. He was not alone. And Tyrion still dreams of Tysha, even though he has Shae now. He doesn't need Tysha, but he still dreams of her. And it makes my heart hurt a little bit for Tyrion that he has these. He just wants to be loved, and he can't.
Right.
He can't. He finds love, but he can't trust it.
Yeah, that is exactly. He can't trust it because he's he was there when the deal was made that, you know, she will be his person and he will take care of her because of it. So, But, you know, speaking of Shae, I'm wondering what happens now with Shae now that Tywin is back in town, because Tywin is the one that said, pardon my French here, I'm quoting Tywin, that he is not permitted to take the whore to court.
Right.
So he might know what she looks like. He knows that Tyrion had this, had Shae, so it's very possible he knows what she looks like. So
yeah, that was good. That was what I was going to say. I doubt he knows what she looks like, and so this could be his new whore, you know, the one he found when he got to King's Landing, you know. But yeah, it's that is a bit of a worry that he's here and he won't be pleased if he does find out. But hey, it does feel like Tyrion's been very careful to keep that secret, you know, and actually, if Tywin does know what she looks like, this could work in his benefit. Because, of course, Cersei, while dripping poison into her father's ear about Tyrion, could say, "And look, I captured his whore you told him not to bring to King's Landing." Bringing forward Alyaya, who looks nothing like Shae.
That's a good point. It could work in his favor, yes. Exactly. I like it. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so there's three ways that you could help us. You could give us a positive review, like Nightfall did today. That was terrific. Nothing helps spread the word more. We'd appreciate it. You can buy some merchandise at theghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com, or you can buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostharrenhal, where you could become a sustainer at the... Help me with those levels again.
There is the Knight of the Realm tier.
Knight of the Realm.
And there is the Lord Paramount tier.
Lord Paramount tier. Thank you very much.
The Royal Kingsguard tier is a closed tier. Those were our Kickstarter members that joined before end of February 2022.
Gotcha. Okay.
And as always, of course, you can reach us at ghost.harrenhall@gmail.com. You can go out and follow us on Twitter at ghostharrenhall. We're on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Discord.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.